This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Morning Run with Lynn and Shaoning. Now, in about 15 minutes, we're going to be bringing you the KLCI opening numbers as well as some of the latest corporate news. But in the meantime, we're taking a look at the pharmaceutical industry because cities around the world are slowly and somewhat cautiously reopening their economies. But it's unlikely that things will go back to normal until there is a vaccine or at least a reliable treatment for COVID-19. In the US, President Donald Trump has expressed that he's very confident a vaccine will be produced before the end of the year. But according to the WHO, over 120 vaccines have been proposed across the world, and some have even entered the clinical trial phase.
Yeah, there have been some signs of promise. I mean, the US government's top official disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said that a potential treatment for COVID-19 by Gilead had offered some quite good news. But the question, of course, is how far are we away from a cure? And, you know, who are the key players involved in the race to find one?
So for some insights into this, we have on the line with us Sam Fazeli, a senior healthcare analyst with Bloomberg Intelligence. Thank you very much for joining us, Sam. So first of all, can you give us a quick summary of who exactly is in the race to develop a vaccine amongst the big pharmaceuticals?
Yes, sure. So obviously we have a lot of activity going on within the vaccine arena. So the large pharma players that have been vocal about their activities in vaccine development are two large pharmas in the US, which is Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, and then two companies in Europe, which are Sanofi Glaxo as one group and then AstraZeneca. So each one of these has a slightly different approach to the vaccine they're developing, which may end up being complementary approaches.
Now, some of the drug makers have also said they have no intention to profit from any vaccine, selling it at cost of goods. So does this actually mean there will be no impact to the bottom line of these respective companies?
Sure. So I think we have to be very careful when we assess these comments. First, I would say that they would, I'm assuming they would charge more than cost of goods, because obviously you still have the R&D budget that you spent on it, and you have the distribution and things like that. But in general, your point is right. They have said that they would be supplying the vaccines, not all of them, some of them have said that, at cost for during the pandemic period or for emergency use. So I would take that to mean that if this virus became a long-standing issue, or if we had the world decided to go and vaccinate its entire population, that it will not be then provided at cost. Obviously, the business of pharmaceutical companies is to make drugs and make a profit from them. So in the early stage, I suspect for use in emergency situation to vaccinate the healthcare individuals, etc., probably. But I'm sure in the longer term, they will find an agreement with governments to make a return on their investment.
So in the US, Dr. Anthony Fauci has said he's seen quite good news regarding a potential therapy with Gilead's remdesivir drug. Is that the most encouraging news you've seen so far from pharmaceuticals, or is optimism ways away still?
One of the things that's going on in the world around us these days is that everybody is analyzing every single trial or test that's being done by different laboratories, different individuals, without really having the expertise or without really understanding the background of how you assess these trials. What Dr. Fauci said, which of course he's one of the most eminent physicians in this space and with a deep knowledge of infectious disease, is that this was a trial that was properly conducted and showed a benefit in one measure of assessing patients with COVID-19 disease. There are, of course, many other aspects that you need to look at. Depth of the response, what group types of patients respond better. That's what the sort of thing that you do when you have a much larger trial, which is now being conducted still by Gilead. The risk of approving these drugs too early, and I'm not suggesting that was the wrong thing to do, far be it for me to say that against someone as experienced as Dr. Fauci. The risk of having these drugs approved early is that it makes it more complicated to do more in-depth analysis of the potential of the product. It would be tougher to recruit patients because then once it's approved, it's unethical not to give it to every patient that's there. So how will you ever know if the drug is better for patients with a specific type of comorbidity or a different aspect of disease. You will just never know that. So there is a plus and minus to the decision that was taken, but obviously we are in extraordinary times and governments, I'm just hearing that Japan is thinking of doing the same. But it does have a cost to it by approving drugs early.
Now, as good as a treatment drug might be, it's still not a vaccine, right? So while President Donald Trump has expressed confidence that a vaccine could be found maybe in 2020, some others are cautious and we have to wait till saying that we have to wait until 2021. So what do you think is a realistic timeline?
So it all depends what you mean as available. So we could always get a drug that's never been properly tested or a vaccine that's never been properly tested in the usual path and timelines that it takes to test these things and put them on the market. You could always do that under political pressure or scientific pressure. By the end of this year, it's entirely possible to have a vaccine that's been tested on animals and a few people and put that on the market or give that to emergency use. But there is no way that that vaccine would have gone through the sort of longer term, basically physically impossible, longer term safety assessments that usually drugs need to go through. In the European Union, for instance, they always need 52 weeks of safety data for a normal regulatory approval in a large trial. So you could put a product to market as long as it shows some kind of activity in terms of its immune response. But you will not know how safe it is, and you will not know how effective it is until you put it into the broader use, and that takes time.
And typically, there would also be intellectual property-related concerns when firms develop new technology like vaccines. Is there much precedence for cooperation, perhaps, and bypassing patents?
Yeah, not that I know of, necessarily. I mean, the cooperation is happening already. We have pharma companies who have always cooperated with each other. You know, licensing deals and partnerships are the usual bread and butter of the pharma industry. So the best example here is two massive rivals, GlaxoSmithKline and Sanofi in the vaccines business, have got together to pool their expertise. Sanofi is producing the so-called antigens from the virus, and Glaxo is providing its so-called adjuvant, which is the combination of the two make a standard type of vaccine. So those two companies are working together to do this. That is not normal, although it has happened before where they do commercial partnerships, quite a lot of commercial partnerships. But intellectual property partnerships or expertise partnerships such as this are rare within the pharma industry. So there is some of that. It happens a lot more between pharma and biotech. So AstraZeneca and the Oxford University team, Johnson & Johnson with a whole variety of other players, Pfizer with BioNTech. You have a whole host of these things, but that is a very normal behavior for pharma companies. Now, in terms of waiving intellectual property rights, I don't think we need that to get a vaccine to be produced going forward. At the end of the day, all you need is commercial manufacturing. Once you've developed a vaccine, you can own the IP, and then you just do deals with the Lonzos of this world and Catalans of this world to do manufacturing for you. So that's, again, part of the normal behavior of pharma industry.
So, Sam, do you see the pandemic changing the business model of big pharma then?
I don't think so. I mean, at the end of the day, there are some businesses around the world whose business models will change during the time that we have the problems with the virus. But in the pharmaceutical industry, it's all about creating inventions, getting the right type of intellectual property protection for them, and profiting from them within the confines of that time of period that you've got. In this case, companies may be okay to provide their know-how for manufacturing and production at scale for products, but it's not going to change the way that the pharmaceutical industry functions. I just don't see why that should change. The reason we are here today able to have such rapid, potentially, hopefully fruitful response to getting drugs and vaccines to market is because we have enabled innovation to be rewarded. By taking that incentive away, you just destroy all that effort.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Sam. That was Sam Fazeli of Bloomberg Intelligence giving us some insight into the state of vaccine development when it comes to fighting this COVID-19 pandemic. And he pointed out something about the safety testing that was required in the European Union that admittedly quite startled me, because he pointed out that the EU typically requires 52 weeks of safety data before it considers a vaccine kind of a viable candidate for mass production, right? So 52 weeks is a whole year. So if you think about, okay, when we started hearing about vaccines going into clinical trials, maybe that was like in the middle of April. With that, if it's held to that standard, we'd only see a vaccine hit the mass market in April of next year.
And guess what? You're not even talking about mass commercial production, mm-hmm. right? Because that's going to be the other hurdle. So there are many, many hurdles in this race to get the vaccine. Firstly, you know, you've got to find the right formula, whatever the chemistry component, because I think the other issue, of course, is that this virus is still very new to us,
yes.
right? We've only knew about it probably in early part of this year. So I think scientists are just also still learning about it, because we've heard about mutation versions of it, right? Because mm-hmm. there are cases where COVID-19 seems to be
more contagious.
Yeah,
more
some people are super spreaders, right?
Yes.
So A, we're learning about it. And then, of course, B, you know, finding a cure is, of course, it's I guess a bit of luck and a lot of science.
And Sam also brought up the issue of comorbidity, right? Which is basically, what other concurrent conditions do you have in addition to this COVID-19? So let's say, you know, you test this vaccine on a completely healthy person, you know, normal blood pressure, normal sugar levels, and it works. What about someone with diabetes mellitus?
Yeah.
What about someone with high blood pressure or some other variant of heart disease? That all has to be taken into account before a vaccine can be produced for a larger population. So it looks like we may still be some ways off yet from a fully tested vaccine, although perhaps emergency treatments are still already, I think, starting to hit
yeah.
the market.
I mean, we've got like 100 different treatment programs going on, you know, and they'll be also being tested. So this includes like antiviral drugs to antibody-containing plasma from recovered patients to, guess what? To even traditional Chinese herbal medicine, right? Anything. I think that basically everyone is thinking of how best to, you know, overcome this COVID-19.
Absolutely. And while this is, we're going to be watching this very closely, but right now we have the 9 o'clock news bulletin for you, followed by the KLCI opening numbers and some corporate news. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.